Welcome to Engaging the Issues, West Virginia's only program dedicated to engaging conversations about the issues affecting our families. I'm Jeremy Dice, your host and president of the Family Policy Council of West Virginia. Debates about the nature and purpose of religious freedom in this country are as old as the Mayflower. Yet even the casual observer of culture recognizes that there is something different happening to the notion of religious freedom today. My guest this week sees that too and joins me now to help us engage this issue more closely. Doug Napier serves as Senior Vice President of Legal for Alliance Defending Freedom at its headquarters in Scottsdale, Arizona. There, he leads a litigation team of approximately 40 attorneys and legal support staff at offices across the country. Before joining Alliance Defending Freedom in 2007, Napier practiced civil trial law in Iowa for 16 years. He earned his JD from the University of Iowa with distinction and is a fellow of the Iowa Academy of Trial Lawyers. Doug, thanks for joining me today on Engaging the Issues.
Well, thanks for having me, Jeremy. It's always great to be with you.
I want to ask you several questions about the changing nature of the defense of religious freedom in this country, but let's set the discussion on a firm foundation first. Now, what is religious freedom, and how do people, not just clergy, but how do real people benefit from it in their day-to-day lives?
Well, from the founding of our great nation, religious liberty has always been at the forefront of the protections that our society has embraced. It's in our First Amendment. It's at the forefront of our Constitutional Bill of Rights. And it's always been recognized that when people are able to freely live out their faith, not simply just worship, not simply go to church, but to exercise their faith in the public square, in the workplace, in schools, in academia, setting up hospitals, soup kitchens, whatever it might be, that the society as a whole benefits. So at the fundamental level, religious freedom is simply allowing people to engage in the culture by expressing their faith traditions in a practical, realistic way.
You know, there's another foundational element here that we need to lay, but it's so obvious that we often forget to think about it even. And that is this: if religious freedom is so good and necessary and guaranteed even in our Constitution, then why doesn't it defend itself? Why must we defend it?
That's a very good question. For a long time, you know, it was just so assumed that religious freedom is not only something that coexists in society, but it's integrated into the fabric of our culture. But we have seen over the last several decades, and more seriously in probably the last 4 to 5 years, the attack on religious freedom has gone from simply this idea of being a right that should be protected and promoted to one that should be punished and excluded from the public square, excluded from academia and other places. And so, you know, it's no longer that we're fighting just to prevent the limitations, the encroachment on religious freedom. Today, we're fighting to prevent the elimination of religious freedom in entirety.
You've hinted at this some already, but you and the Alliance Defending Freedom have been at the forefront of defending religious freedom for decades. And as 2013 now begins, how has the effort to preserve these first freedoms changed? Could you elaborate more on that?
Sure. You know, for a long time, it's always been this this tug of war of what is the role of religion in society? What are the limits? You know, we've heard for a long time this the so-called notion of separation of church and state, you know, something that's not found in our Constitution, that's been in the imaginations of folks like the ACLU, have repeated it so many times, people think it's part of our Constitution. And it's this idea of what place can religion have in public square, in terms of public financing, in terms of school prayer, in terms of education and other things. And so there's been this jockeying of trying to draw the boundaries of what's proper and what is, you know, steps over the line into either government support or entanglement of religion. Well, those have been fairly, fairly difficult issues at times, but really not to the point where they're saying, well, religion doesn't have any place. Now we've gotten to the point where folks are taking the position that religion has no place in culture, and it has to be completely separated, completely isolated. Basically, they're saying, if you're a person of faith, go into your church or synagogue, shut the door, draw the drapes and the blinds, and do what you want to do there in the privacy and seclusion of the church, but don't bring it out into public. When you bring it out in the public, that's a big, huge no-no. And that's what we're up against now, is just getting the world to recognize that we still have a fundamental right to exercise our faith freely everywhere, and that this notion of eliminating religious freedom in the public square is really the new battle line.
You know, some may accuse you and me, of course, of hyperbole in the vein of George Orwell when we suggest that religious freedom could actually be eliminated in this country, as you just did. This isn't North Korea, and it's not communist China. Our country has been enshrined with religious freedom and religious liberty within its constitution, and to some degree, it's been woven into our cultural fabric as well. But really, could religious freedom truly be eliminated here in the United States?
Well, I agree with those who are concerned that we might be screaming the sky is falling. On the other hand, the evidence is there. We're seeing the cases. We're fighting those cases. We're engaged in litigation where these are the issues that are being promoted. When you've got a whole presidential administration that are telling people in businesses that you have to choose between staying in business or following your faith, that's where you see the elimination of religious liberty. Is it going to be closed down wholesale overnight? No, that's not how it ever happens. The left has been encroaching for the last 50 years and successfully chipping away at those fundamental religious rights. And that's what happens. If we are not diligent, if we're not vigilant in fighting back and preserving and reclaiming those things that have made this nation great, then yes, there is a very real and dangerous threat to us losing our religious liberties.
One of those favorite phrases by those who would kind of chip away at this first freedom of ours is the phrase freedom of worship. But that's not the right that was secured within the First Amendment. That's a change in syntax. Is there any evidence today that those who cherish the freedom to worship are also, in fact, targeting religious freedom?
Well, you know, in New York City, we've been fighting a case for 17 years where churches have been able to rent public schools like every other school groups, Boy Scouts, parent-teacher associations, or private community organizations, just simply rent the empty space on weekends or in evenings when they're not being used as public schools. It's a great revenue source for the schools. Now, the school district has been trying very hard to eliminate churches from gathering in these buildings. What's very interesting about the case is that, well, you can get together, you can have a study, you can talk about religious things, you just can't worship. So this notion of worship like this is some kind of a dangerous, threatening exercise has been a part of the way that they've been framing the issue. The other thing is they're saying, well, you have the right to worship, which is more or less saying you have the right to believe whatever you want to believe, you just don't have the right to act on it. You can't carry those beliefs and have those beliefs impact the way you vote, the way you speak, the way you write, the way you teach, the way you practice medicine, practice your professions. Those things are limited. So you're right. They have changed the syntax and the lexicon to try to basically get us to be distracted from what's really at stake here, and that is the full component of what it means to have the right to exercise religious freedom.
Doug, just a few days ago, major portions of the Affordable Care Act went into full force and effect. And among those, as you've alluded to earlier, is the contraceptive mandate by which those that offer benefit packages to their employees must now fund medication that could cause chemical abortions. Hobby Lobby is a very great example of one of those who has refused to violate the convictions of its owners and is now being penalized by the federal government for asserting their religious freedom to do business according to their religious conscience. Yet some suggest that Hobby Lobby is, in fact, attempting to secure additional rights that corporations before now have not even had. Is that, in fact, the case? Are these religious business owners trying to create new rights now found in the First Amendment that weren't there before?
Well, it all goes back to this basic notion that our rights don't derive from this, from our Creator. These inalienable rights that recognize in our Declaration of Independence coming from somebody other than man or government. The modern view is that our rights are derived from the government. Therefore, whatever the government says, you get to do or not do. And if you want anything besides that, then you're bucking up against the system. No, Hobby Lobby and Hercules, who we represent in Colorado, and a number of these other private businesses who want to operate their businesses based on Christian principles, which to me sounds like a very good thing for business, very good thing for customers to have those kinds of principles applied, are being told, well, if you're going to be in commerce, that's a secular activity. Therefore, there are no religious protections there. Well, that's nonsense. Again, it's that this chasm of divide that says you have to divide the universe into the spiritual versus the secular. And people of faith don't see it that way. It's an integrated system of worldview that should inform us on every level of the way we live. They're not asking for new rights. These are rights that have been recognized for 200 plus years of our nation's history. They're just asking to be protected in those rights and not having been taken away by an executive branch department who's saying, you know what, we're going to tell you what to do or you're going to get out of business.
Many pastors and lay leaders often listen to this program, and I'd like you to speak to them directly. Christians and evangelicals, I think, in particular, have, I think if we're honest, have done some hand-wringing over the last couple of decades here, mulling over whether it is even appropriate for Christians to assert, politically or legally, their human and constitutional rights of religious freedom. Rather than rehash those arguments here, because we're not going to solve it now if we haven't solved it in two decades, or even really evaluate their effects, if they're right or not, what are you seeing today? Are those who value religious freedom, especially among those who are in the clergy and otherwise, are they fractured or are they unified?
Well, you know what? I guess the nice thing about this sort of persecution is it does have a unifying effect. It does bring the church together, and I use church in the universal sense, people that are believers and really even cross-denominational and cross-traditional Jews and Christians and others who are seeing that this is a real threat to all of our basic freedoms, because we know that when religious freedoms are expanded, everyone benefits. Even non-religious people benefit from the expansion of religious liberties, because when the notion of freedom expands, everybody benefits. Now, what we're seeing, though, and I really give a great tribute to those who are rising up and speaking from the pulpit, who are encouraging their people to get involved and are connecting the dots between what's being taught on Sunday morning and what's happening the rest of the week out in our culture, that people are becoming informed and they're becoming engaged. And I really appreciate what the Family Policy Council of West Virginia is doing and your grassroots efforts to get the word out and to inform local people. I know you sent out a letter to the school districts recently on what their role can be in this whole thing. You're doing great work. The church needs to step up. We all need to join together and become even more unified if we're going to win this battle.
Doug, some have suggested that efforts to limit religious freedom in other countries has actually caused the church to grow. So why should Christians who want to see Christianity spread, why should they value the legal and political notion of religious freedom?
Well, because, one, it's not a political notion. It is a God-given right. And politics and the political systems, theologically and otherwise, have always been recognized as the system which is there to protect those basic inalienable rights. So we need to hold our politicians accountable. We need to remind them what their role is, that they are subordinated to the authority of the electorate, to the people who vote them into office, that they're public servants, and they're also there to carry out the mission of protecting those basic fundamental rights and liberties, which existed far before this country was founded, and certainly are recognized in our founding documents.
We've spent a little bit of time here, I suppose, not being as fair perhaps to our secularist friends as we maybe should. Many of those who value religious freedom are in fact carrying a secular worldview. Just as much as you and I value religious freedom, so do they. But why should they, those who don't ascribe to a Christian worldview, why should everyone work to defend the idea of religious freedom?
Well, as I said earlier, when religious freedom expands for any group, you know, everybody benefits from that. So it's like the Niemöller scenario in Germany. At what point do we stop taking action? And then when it comes time for our rights to be restricted, there's nobody there to help us. So I think that, yeah, there is some common ground across the spectrum of even, you know, leftist secularists who maybe have a different idea of what religious freedom is. I think they still understand that when you have a larger government that has more control and exercises more coercive powers over individual behavior and actions, that is going to be a problem for our society. You become basically totalitarian centrist government that's telling people how they need to live. I don't think anybody wants that. Nobody wants that for our nation. It's never worked, and we're seeing the effects of that in Europe, and we don't want to become more European. We want to become more American.
Well, Doug, thanks for all you do and all that ADF does in your constant commitment to the defense of religious freedom, and thank you for joining me today on Engaging the Issues.
My very pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you. You know, early on, Doug made a very insightful point that I really don't want you to miss. He said that a subtle change has occurred. Their efforts have evolved from defending efforts to limit religious freedom to now working to repel efforts that would eliminate religious freedom. Given some of the examples that he cites, maybe it's not as Orwellian a notion to think that religious freedom really is targeted for elimination. In fact, just thinking through what we at the Family Policy Council of West Virginia have been working on recently makes it even more clear. Last summer, West Virginia University was targeted by activists for merely letting Chick-fil-A sell chicken on their campus. Last month, I argued in court on behalf of a church's right to shepherd their flock according to their religious convictions. Later today, I'll be offering testimony before a committee at the legislature to explain why punishing speech that one person finds to be offensive at school, well, it's a threat to the students sharing the gospel entirely. The point is that religious liberty cannot defend itself, that the Constitution tells Congress that it shall make no law that prevents Americans from living life, doing business, and learning according to their religious convictions, doesn't stop some in the government from trying. Of course, there is a growing divide in our country. Those who insist upon limiting religious liberty to the freedom of worship demonstrate their ignorance of religion entirely, especially that of Christianity. While other faiths require strict adherence to religious law for salvation, one of Christianity's distinct features is that, as redeemed men and women, we are to order every aspect of our lives according to Scripture. Salvation is not earned, but is given to us by grace. Nonetheless, in light of that grace, our worldview has been radically changed to suggest that Christians, or any religious group for that matter, ought to or even could limit our beliefs to the four walls of a church suggests that Americans ought to worship notions of equality or democracy over Christ. We can't do that. What of Doug's prediction that religious freedom is targeted for elimination? What happens if religious liberty, in fact, is removed and eliminated altogether? Well, that doesn't really matter, does it? Christ has called each of us to exercise our religious freedom fully, to going into all, every corner of the world and proclaiming the gospel, and not just proclaiming, but making disciples and baptizing them in the name of Jesus. I can't help but think of that famous scene in Acts 4, verses 19 through 21, where Peter and the apostles have been brought before the rulers and told to stop preaching about this Jesus guy. Peter and John reply, "Hey, whether it is right in the sight of God to listen to you rather than to God, you must judge, for we cannot but speak of what we have seen and have heard." In other words, whether or not religious liberty is in fact eliminated, that gospel that has been entrusted to us is not something that we are even able to silently worship. Rather, for followers of Christ, it ought to burst out of us in whatever we do. Nonetheless, as Acts 4:21 makes clear, the apostles were severely punished for the refusal to submit to government, and they were okay with that. And it shouldn't bother us when we are mocked or slighted by our opponents. Nonetheless, like Paul, we exercise every legal and political means that have been provided to us by the government that God has installed over us so that we might protect your right to hear and speak the truth. And that is the mission that you can count on the Family Policy Council of West Virginia to continue to pursue day in and day out. For now, thanks for listening. I hope you'll learn more about the Alliance Defending Freedom at alliancedefendingfreedom.org. Engaging the issues is supported by the faith-based giving of families like yours. We welcome your financial partnership at familypolicywv.com, where you can also learn more about how the Family Policy Council of West Virginia is advancing, defending, and equipping West Virginia's families through policy, politics, and preparation. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/FPCWV, and be sure to visit our blog at engagefamilyminute.com to learn how you can engage the issues as well.